The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Kick things off, I'm joined by Jess Kelly, News Talk's technology correspondent, presenter of Tech Talk. She is here with me, and Renzo Downey, who's political reporter with the Texas Tribune. You're both very, very welcome. And Renzo, thanks a million for popping into our makeshift studio here in downtown Austin. Jess, you might explain exactly to people listening at home why we're here.
Yeah, so we're here as part of a delegation from Ireland. The programme is called Ireland Gateway to Europe. And this was established in 2012. Basically, it's the coming together of different businesses, individuals, brilliant brains who are coming to fly the Irish flag in the US. So over the next couple of days, there's going to be a ton of people flying the Irish flag. We are in Austin, as you know, now, and we are going to Boston later in the week. And the whole point of the trip is to make friends, create relationships, shake the hands, explain to people in the US what Ireland is all about and how we really are a portal for Europe. What we've seen over the last number of years is that there's a lot of sort of symbiotic relationships between certain parts of the United States and Ireland. Austin is a prime example because it is a bubbling tech city. And there's a lot of similarities between what I've seen here so far and what we have back home in Dublin. Later, obviously, we know that there's a huge amount of Irish in Boston. Again, a great city in terms of innovation, med tech, an awful lot going on. So we're going to go out, meet some brilliant brains, create that relationship. When we were on this trip, I was on a trip with you 2 years ago as part of this programme. And one thing that was said to me that sticks in my brain is that so many deals are done after hours. So, you know, you go to the meetings, you sit through presentations, everyone's got their blazers on. And then you go and hang out afterwards and relationships are struck up, deals are done, and it does feed back into the economy. Also, it stands to you down the line as well, because you never know when a relationship could be quite useful. So I'm actually very excited about this because we're going to hear from Indeed, we're going to hear from Dell, a lot of the big players that we play, you know, host to in Ireland that obviously have bases here. But to get a little snoop into their HQs here in America is very exciting for me.
What did you watch on the plane?
Did you know what I did?
I know what you did. That's why I asked. And I want everybody listening to this show to know what you did. I want you to out yourself on national radio.
Only if you let me explain it. I watched Oppenheimer twice.
Twice?
Can I explain
back
why?
Back to back, Oppenheimer.
Yeah, can I explain?
It's 7 hours of your life.
Can I explain why?
Go on.
Because we were on a 10-hour flight. Oppenheimer is...
They had other things.
No, let me explain. Oppenheimer is 3 hours and 9 seconds, right? Okay. I thought, if I can get through it twice, then we're 2/3 of the way there. It's a great film. It's very enjoyable.
So many holes in that logic.
No, there's not.
Of course there is.
How?
There's any number of other things you could have watched.
Yeah, but I'd have to pay attention.
That's equally long. So you could have watched that back to, after Oppenheimer, and you would have been 2/3 of the way through your flight.
Yeah.
You could have just watched loads of episodes of Parks and Rec of the US. You could have done anything you wanted.
No.
You could have played 2048. They've got games on the plane.
Yeah, but I'm not a child. Do you know what I did? I was doing the crossword.
Ouch.
I had the newspaper and I was doing the crossword. I was doing Sudokus. Because I'd seen the film so many times before, I didn't have to pay that much attention. So it was just like Cillian Murphy and the grim nuclear bomb were keeping me company for 6 hours and 18 seconds.
I just relived last summer for a lot of people. I did the whole Barbenheimer.
I saw you watching Barbie and I was
Barbie,
like, oh yeah.
To Oppenheimer, neither of which I'd seen actually until the plane yesterday.
Had you not?
No, hadn't seen Oppenheimer, hadn't got around to it.
Isn't it great? Would you watch it back to back?
Jesus, Jess. 7 hours or whatever it is in my life. Anyway, it is a great movie. Listen, we digress. So listen, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the things Jess mentioned there with the Gateway to Europe guys and exactly how that mission has changed as well. I mean, when it started 10 plus years ago, very much about kind of drumming up inward investment from an Irish point of view when we badly needed it. The economy was on its oxters to a degree. And now a much more kind of a transatlantic focus. And there are people here as part of that mission looking to set up shop in the States and expand in this direction. So like I say, we're going to talk about all that and a whole lot more. But I mentioned Renzo Downey, the political reporter with the Texas Tribune, who is with us as well. Renzo, you're welcome to the show again. So I mentioned some of the things we're going to be talking about later. We're talking about abortion and immigration and guns and everything in the context maybe of the looming US presidential election. How much does the politics of the state of Texas reflect the politics of the nation?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, and thank you for inviting me to your little makeshift studio here, and welcome to Texas. You know, Texas is a reliably conservative state when it comes to the presidential election. In recent years, that's shifted a little bit. It's been more in play. It was pretty close for Joe Biden by pretty close, like 5 points. And Democrats are maybe considering Texas is on, you know, is in play. But in the Senate, you've got Senator Ted Cruz. He's up for re-election. He was last up in 2018 when Beto O'Rourke ran against him as a Democrat. And that was also the closest that a Democrat has come to flipping Texas. And so this year you've got Colin Allred, who's a congressman. He's running against Ted Cruz. And he, yesterday we just got some fundraising numbers. He's fundraising at a faster rate than Beto O'Rourke was. And everybody knows how close Beto came. So there's a lot of interest in what Colin Allred could do in November.
Where is Beto O'Rourke on? I mean, you guys probably know exactly, but I think for people in Ireland listening, to be much like myself, he was once kind of heralded as one of the kind of the great white hopes of the Democratic Party, and I haven't heard about him in about 5 years.
Yes, yeah. Beto O'Rourke was a congressman from El Paso. That's far west point of Texas, part of Texas that feels a little forgotten.
The song literally refers to it as the far west Texas town of El Paso.
Yeah, and it's a very blended town. It's right on the border, and so there's a lot of Mexican influence in El Paso. And so Beto O'Rourke, he ran as a progressive West Texas candidate. And he, since then, he ran for president in 2020, didn't do so well. Mm. And he's disappeared from the national front since then. But he's been somewhat active with other projects, just not things that would necessarily make national news or international
news. So does he have presidential ambitions still? What's the word on the street?
It's hard to tell. That's another 4 years from now. I think most people are trying to figure out what's going to happen in November.
Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of what's happening in November, what's happening now in that context as well. So, you know, people listening at home in Ireland to this conversation will have heard conversations right throughout the day about Donald Trump and his legal woes. You know, so they're making headlines kind of all over the world. To what extent are people engaged with it at the moment in Texas, in the country? Is it something that, like, you know, maybe we get fascinated by within the media bubble, but other people kind of put it off and say, well, that's in November, I'll think about it in October?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of apathy right now.
Right.
I mean, Donald Trump has been in the cycle for, this is his third election, so it's going to be 8 years, maybe 10 years since he first announced he's running for president. That's a long time to be focusing on one man like that, especially when he's, you know, constantly grabbing headlines.
Mm.
So I think a lot of people at this point, they're pretty set on whether they like Donald Trump or not. The question is more, are the people who don't like Donald Trump, are they okay with Joe Biden? And in 2020, it seemed like there were a good number of voters who didn't want Trump, were okay with Biden. And this time around, maybe some of those voters will just sit this one out.
One of the issues I've heard mentioned, you know, when I kind of dip in and out of the politics of this country over the last few weeks and months, is the focus on kind of cost of living on people. Certainly it's a Republican talking point, you know what I mean? Keep driving it home that it is becoming more and more expensive to live in this country and to get by, and put that on the door, the lap of Joe Biden. And Jess, in that context, actually, from an Irish point of view today, there is this survey out that suggests we kind of are dealing with some of the exact same problems, particularly when it comes to the younger people.
Yeah, really interesting survey from the National Youth Council of Ireland, and it was focused primarily on 18 to 29 year olds. That's a significant cohort of our young people, and they found that around half feel like they are worse off than their parents. The key issues around housing, the cost of living, people were saying they skipped meals to save money, and that is something that I do understand and empathize with. I think, now I'm slightly out of that cohort by about 5 years, but I do know that a lot of people feel frustrated at the moment because we were all told to, you know, go to college, get a job, save your pennies, try and get a mortgage, get mortgage approved. And then can you buy a house? No. Can you afford your rent? No.
Are
you?
Well, it's the social contract, isn't it? Like, that's ultimately, and it's an abstract term a lot of the time, but ultimately that's what it is. It's the idea that you do those things,
yeah,
and you work hard and you get the so-called decent job. And that decent job could be as a guard, you know, a police officer. We're going to talk about that actually in a few minutes' time. It could be as a teacher. It could be as a nurse. It could be as something more high-flying.
Yeah.
But if you do those basic things and get those decent jobs, you can at least put a roof over your head.
But this
you don't have a yacht. You don't have 5 holidays a year. But you can put a roof over your head and go on holidays in the summer.
Yeah, and I think the thing that kind of struck me with some of the headlines from home about the people worse off than their parents, I feel so incredibly lucky. Like, I have worked hard, but I love what I do. I have great friends. I have great opportunity to travel. I don't have to retire if I have kids or leave the workforce if I have kids. Like, I'm in such a privileged position, but there are still massive pain points. And it comes down to policy related issues, things like housing, things like the cost, the infrastructure. Like, if you wanted to live outside of one of the big cities, is there the infrastructure there to facilitate that? If you don't have the infrastructure, you need to drive. Yes, you'll get cheaper rent or cheaper mortgage payments, but you're going to be disconnected. So there's a whole host of frustration that I think is palpable from this survey.
Renzo, is this an issue that you see reflected in this country, that sense of disenfranchisement?
Yes, millennials are the first generation that are feeling that they're not as well off as their parents, that their standard of living isn't improving. You have high rent, it's the barriers to buying a home, it's much more expensive than it was just a generation ago. And even with inflation, as you were talking earlier with Republicans, critics of President Joe Biden saying that the Biden administration really drove inflation in the United States, you know, you could make the argument that that was the national, international trade that was affecting that, as it was, you know, I'm sure, something that was seen in your country as well. And as well, you're seeing young voters just feel like they've been left behind by the system. And they're probably not as inclined to...
Yeah, I was going to ask, how does that manifest then in terms of politics? Is it apathy? Is it an attraction to kind of third-party candidates? No, does it lend a kind of an air of attraction to, you know, one of the Kennedys, you know what I mean, with maybe kind of spurious views about certain issues that we don't necessarily need to get into in any great detail here? What is it?
Yeah, well, I think what you're seeing right now in approval polls is that young voters don't really like Joe Biden necessarily. They feel like he's an older generation. But at the same time, what's to say they're not going to come back in November, come back to Joe Biden and say, well, I really dislike Donald Trump.
The idea of holding your nose and voting for him anyway type thing.
Right. I mean, Joe Biden has some pretty low approval ratings. And that seems to be... You know, the way politics in the U.S. are right now is everyone's pretty decided. And Donald Trump before him had historically low approval ratings. And so everybody's already kind of into their camp. And so it's now, how much can you work the middle, the people who, you know, don't really feel like they fit in either spot? How can you make them feel like they should be in your camp?
Yeah, well, isn't that just what they say? All these kind of election analysts and these gurus that parties love to hire, that's what they talk about. You know, there's always people who vote for you. There's always people who won't vote for you. It's the people in the middle.
Yeah.
How do you influence them? And that's how you win the election.
I've been listening to an awful lot of Pod Save America, and it's hosted by some former Obama staffers. And
Jon Favreau.
Love
Isn't that
him.
His name?
Yeah.
Because it's not that Jon Favreau.
It's the other one.
So I remember.
But it's fascinating. And what really strikes me is that obviously they are Democrats, but you can hear their reluctance in backing Joe Biden. And I think it's that thing of Americans don't have a super inspiring or aspirational ballot at all. And if you are someone who is young, like, how do you relate to Joe Biden? How does Joe Biden relate or reflect you? And the same with Donald Trump. Like, in terms of the candidates, I haven't seen anyone that that you think, oh, this could be a bolt out of the blue and be really exciting. And I think the way things have been in America for the last number of years, it's kind of a scary time not to have, you know, a lightning rod for people to morph towards or to move towards. And I think that sense of what's the best of a bad lot is very, very uninspiring for such an epic country.
Gary from Limerick is after getting in touch, and he says, did you know that a band from Limerick called Tuesday Blue were given the freedom of the city of Austin in the 1980s? Gary, I absolutely didn't know that. and I'd wager lots of people listening didn't, but they do now, Gary. So thank you for the text. 087 1400 106. Just actually kind of to bring us back to Austin, rather than kind of national politics or anything else we've been talking about, you know, that issue about the cost of living, partly we've seen it driven in Dublin, Jess, by kind of those big tech companies coming in. And you mentioned some of the salaries. They'd be on similar things. I know, Renzo, happening in this city and have been happening in this city over the last number of years. And Samsung are one of the big companies with a presence here. They've got a huge new chip factory being built. And they're in the headlines as well around the world as well. They're bigger than Apple. Is that right?
They're bigger than Apple. That switcheroo that happens every few months. Who's the bigger retailer? Is it Apple? Is it Samsung? Guess what, lads? Now it's Samsung's turn. These stats, they come out every few months. It is quite interesting, but we know, like the dogs on the street know, that the two biggest mobile phone manufacturers are Apple and Samsung. Samsung has taken over ever so slightly, and it comes at a bad enough time for Apple. They've had, since the pandemic, they seem to have had a whole host of issues. They recently scrapped their plans for their car. They unveiled their Vision Pro. I don't know if you've tried it, Renzo, the €3,000 virtual reality headset. We might pick one up when we're here and try and expense it. But so they're trying to continue with their innovation. But in terms of phone sales, they haven't nipped it. Chips is actually a big part of it. Chip production became a finite resource and a huge issue during the pandemic. So Samsung establishing this processing plant here in Austin is a great sign for them to be able to continue to manufacture chips as they go along. It's a massive innovation and investment for the city as well. I think it's 40 million or thereabouts. So it is a huge, huge driver for the company.
You've been out to this chip plant or where it's going to be built. Is that right, Renzo?
Yes, it's currently under construction. It's about six stories.
Wow.
Massive footprint. And it's funny, you're in Central Texas, you're driving through fields, farmland, and all of a sudden you look up and it's this massive construction site with cranes completely out of place. Mm. And it's just up the road from Austin. Samsung already has one plant in Austin, and Samsung is currently working on building two more. And this federal funding from the Chips and Science Act, this is something that Texas Senator John Cornyn and one of Austin's local congressmen, Mike McCall, they both really pushed for the CHIPS Act.
Okay.
And so that is bringing $6.4 billion in federal funding to Samsung's three Austin area factories, or soon to be factories mm-hmm. in the case of the North Austin ones. This is going to be manufacturing that's also working on packaging, because that's a big part of the equation. A lot of, majority of the chips are produced overseas, and an even greater share are packaged overseas.
And that was part of the challenge during the pandemic, is that they were so reliant on those systems that were outside of the country. And I know that this is something that Joe Biden has spoken passionately about as well, is trying to get this exact thing happening in this country. So it's great to see it's actually coming to fruition.
Yes. Yeah, this was... You had the Secretary of Commerce, the Biden Secretary of Commerce mm-hmm. was in town, other Biden administration officials. You had Republicans and Democrats sharing the stage. It's a pretty rare bipartisan moment.
Well,
in Austin.
Listen, we're going to delve into some of those issues right throughout the show. We're coming to you live if you're just joining us from Austin, Texas. I mentioned a bit earlier myself and Jess Kelly going on this forlorn hunt for 1.5 million bats last night and how terrified Jess was of catching rabies. Jess, a text has come in. There's thousands of large bats on the move every evening in Sydney in Australia, and apparently they all have chlamydia. So Jess mightn't like that too much either.
What a lovely option.
That is a lovely, lovely message. Thank you. 087 1400 106. Keep those messages coming.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.